Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from Tan Talk Radio Network Studio here in glorious Clearwater, Florida. It is so beautiful. It is why everybody should live in Florida. I don't want you all to live in Florida, but it is why you should. It is so beautiful here. Oh, wow. I am so excited. I have a guest. She's back again, and she can come back again and again. And I am so thrilled to welcome back to Joy on Paper, Carol Bumpus, because she was here not too long ago, actually. And she has now a third book in her wonderful Savoring the Old Ways series. And this new one, you know, I have, for me, it all is always a joy to read a good book and to talk to the author. But there, you know, not every book that I read is could be described as joyous. But this is a book that can be described as joyous. It is a wonderful book. It's called September to Remember, Searching for Culinary Pleasures at the Italian Table. And Carol Bumpus, I am so happy that you are back here on Joy on Paper.
I am too, and thanks for having me back.
Wow. Wow. You know, this, I mean, I love the other books. I love the two previous books based in France, and, you know, I spent a lot of time in France. But this book is particularly precious to me because my first honeymoon we spent in Italy. We did Italy from the top to the toe. We did it, the entire country, in a white Cadillac. And so,
oh, fun.
It was fun. And so this book brings back so many fond memories. And I, as I said, it is a glorious book. It is full of joy and just a thrill to read.
Well, thank you. Thank you. It was actually a fun book to write. It was more of who I am, and it was just a joy to write.
Well, that comes through. That comes through in the writing and the everything to do. You know, you and your husband have had so much fun discovering the world together, the culinary world together. It's just wonderful.
Thank you. Yes.
So, tell us about this one because, as I said, it's in Italy, and I love it. I did it this trip. We had so much fun. One of my particular favorites was Tuscany. So tell us how you started this trip, and just bring us back to Italy.
Okay. Well, actually, this started. This was a trip that we took back in 1998. So we're actually doing a little time travel here. But I had just retired as a family therapist. And my husband said, well, let's go celebrate. And so we went to Italy for a month. But we had never been to Italy before. We had been to France a number of times, but never Italy, and really didn't know where to start. Like you said, you know, there's so many regions and areas to choose. And so I put an ad, or I read an ad in our San Francisco paper, and there was an offer for a rental in Tuscany, and we decided to check it out. And it was the woman who answered the ad, or who owned the property, that induced us. I mean, induced us to come and enjoy and experience Italy in its finest. And it was, so we started, and she said, you must come in September, and you must show up, you know, during this particular weekend, because that's when the festival is going to be. And you won't miss it because it's on your doorstep. And indeed it was. And it was the beginning of, in fact, this was actually a book that should have been written first, because it was really the first exploration of culinary delights and mainly of the people, you know, just loving and enjoying the people, because the outreach and warmth was just so incredible. And so that's how I started, or how we started. So we actually flew into Milan, and there's quite a story about me losing my luggage and having no underwear, and I'll let you all read that. And most men prefer that particular part of the story. And then we took the train down to Tuscany and spent 10 days in this, what they call a farmhouse in Pudere di Montemarano, which was a little tiny, Pudere means farm. So it's not even a village. It's the farm to the village of Montemarano. So, I mean, it's just a wide spot in the road. And we thought, well, okay, here we are out in the middle of nowhere. Well, we had the most incredibly wonderful time there and meeting the people, being part of the people, being introduced to their wonderful culture, their incredible food, and it was joyful. That was the beginning, and it was that trip that I decided to write this series. So it's been a long time in coming, but I am still plodding away. This is my third book of the series, actually in 18 months. expect anyone else to try to get two books out during a COVID, but that's what happened. So that's part of it. And then after that, then we go down into, we end up in Rome and Amalfi, and we went not to the toe of the boot, but to the heel of the boot, and really checked all kinds of things out. And everywhere we went, we just enjoyed the people, the culture, the traditions, and yes, the incredible food.
Well, it is just wonderful that you spent so much time. And for me, it's so sad that people can't do that right now. But they can get a taste of what it's going to be like when all this horrible time is over and people can travel again. Because this is, your book is a combination of a guidebook, a history book, of course, the food, and as you said, the people, bringing the people to life. And this is what we enjoyed more than anything in Italy. We stayed in places like you did, in the middle of nowhere sometimes. We stayed with, in little pensions. We got to know the people, and because we had like 6 weeks that we could travel, we'd stay sometimes in one place for a while and get to know the countryside. And we did it the entire Appian Way. We eventually did end up in Brindisi, where we took the ferry over, to Greece. So, but the most important thing, the people were so wonderful.
Yes. And I think that's a surprise that I really expected people to be a little bit more standoffish. But if you were introduced to them through people who spoke their language, of which I was, and that was helpful, then you are immediately part of their family. And I experienced that in both France and Italy. And the question is, how do you get those introductions? And that's something that I really worked on. And so I ended up, after this, doing probably 45 different interviews of Italian families and probably 75 interviews in France. And it was all trying to understand the families, their culture, what brings the family to the table? What is the favorite foods that are there? And what do they celebrate and how do they celebrate? But a lot of it was the importance of the family, understanding that.
And eating together. It was so wonderful. We were invited so many times just to family dinners, which were so much fun. It was just... It almost took your breath away. You'd be, somewhere, they have a big table outside and the families would show up, from different houses in the village, and everybody would be there. It was absolute, the word joyous cannot be overused when you talk about those kind of things. It is just amazing. And of course, the food, the freshness of the food.
Right. And in fact, I don't know if people have seen the CNN special with Stanley Tucci in his travels around Italy, which is absolutely glorious. And he goes around celebrating the traditional foods and the people in his series, which is just wonderful. And in fact, many of the places that he goes, I have been to those very places, those water buffalo farms where you get buffalo mozzarella and all of these, you know, these wonderful places that are kind of out of the way. But this is who they are. This is what they do. This is their livelihood. And it's celebrating just the traditional ways of living and living life to the fullest. And it's living on the land. It's eating seasonally, understanding that there is a calendar for all things in the Mediterranean countries.
Well, you know, for me, when I was a little girl, well, a young girl, I used to wash dishes in an Italian restaurant. My cousin was married to Italian, and her daughter was my age, and the two of us would wash dishes in her uncle's restaurant. So we spent every summer. We washed dishes. So we picked up some Italian. And of course, good. The wonderful thing is when I got to Italy, I knew the town where they came from. So, you know, I could go there and all you have to do is say, oh, you have a cousin in Michigan. And everybody's like, yeah, you know, they welcome you. And this is the wonderful thing about Italy. They all have somebody in America. So you really, it's not that difficult to make connections.
That's right. That's right. And they are very excited to share their culture with you and their food.
Oh, they love to do it. They really do. They'll explain things. They'll take you places. They'll take you on side trips that you're like completely amazed. And that's why it's so much better than doing those horrible tour bus trips that you never meet anybody. You know.
Yes. Yes, sometimes those are some of the most fun or the most grueling parts of travel. Sometimes that's the only way that you can get to Capri or that you But what you learn is that you will return, but not on tour.
Exactly. Well, tell us a little bit about Capri, because I love it. And, you know, people hear about it, but it's hard to explain how wonderful it is.
Well, it is such a beautiful, beautiful island, and it's just off the Amalfi Coast in, it's not center of Italy, in the Tyrrhenian Sea, and it is just as beautiful as everyone has talked about, as was Amalfi and Positano and a number of the other cities. But this one in particular is noted from way before the Romans. And and I happen to love that kind of history. I love to know, so what happened here? What's taken place on this island? And it goes back so far and so deep and so wide, but it's celebrated in a way there now where the very most wealthy people show up. And it's a very, very high living place, literally. Literally. And it's gorgeous, and but it's also the common man is that's not his place. He is the worker bee there, and is not a celebrated individual in the same way that you are in other parts of Italy. So that it's gorgeous. It's, you know, it's kind of going to a Hollywood retreat on the top of the most incredible mountain on an island, but it's that's the glamour.
Yeah, that's the glamour. Yes. And it's nice to experience that, but the real excitement it really is still the little villages in the middle of nowhere where you just have nice people and the food. You know, it's hard to, Americans don't really know what noce is. You know, we don't really get it here in America. What they serve here isn't the same thing as what is it, you know, in Tuscany. Can you explain it? I mean, it's like the first time I ate it, it was like I was eating a cloud. I thought, what is this magic food?
Now, are you talking about gnocchi?
Yeah, gnocchi, yeah.
Well, it's actually, you know, I just took a class on cooking with serving gnocchi with fresh lemon and truffle. So, yes, it was a cloud. But it was made with, instead of potatoes, so usually you bake the potato ahead of, you know, and cool it down, then mix it with eggs and cheese, and but then when you roll it out as a dough, like a pasta dough, then you just make it into these little knobs, cut them up into little knobs, and float them in water. And it doesn't take too long to cook, but it's just this wonderful, wonderful, like you said, just little light pillows of pasta. And that I think that was one of the things that I was just blown away by, was all of the varieties of pasta that are available. In France, you have 450 kinds of cheeses. In Italy, you have 450 kinds of pasta. I mean, literally. And each one of them comes from a different region and is celebrated in a different way. No, you can't prepare it that way. Don't even think about it. It's just not going to happen that way. And so this is how you do it. And so that was what I enjoyed, how they are very particular about how you prepare their food, or how they prepare it for you. And that was a learning for me. I think there was a scene in the story that I shared. Actually, it was Lisa telling me about her 6-year-old son who had come home from school and was had brought a friend with him. And now the little Italian housewife or mother always is supposed to be home and ready for a hot pasta dish steaming on the table at the moment the child walks in the door. And, I mean, that's the good mother. And in this case, the good mother had put a little something charred, Swiss chard, on top of the pasta. And the neighbor boy said, "Now, what is this?" And she said, "Well, this is chard." And he says, I can't eat this. And she said, "Well, I'm sorry, that's all we have." And he said, "Okay, I'm sufficed," which meant I will not allow anything that my mother or grandmother has not made before cross my lips. That's it. And it was, how is that possible? Isn't the child hungry? No, it won't happen. And it's understanding this wonderful traditional culture in a way that we don't in the United States quite appreciate, that there's one way, as far as they're concerned, to make something or to, and it's only the way that their Nona mother would make. And so, and don't try to recreate it for people who come over here from Italy, because obviously you don't know what you're doing. You won't get it right, no matter how hard you try. But at least we can make some attempts. And in fact, in the back of the book, I have, I think there's 19 recipes
yeah.
in this one.
Wonderful, wonderful. That's, I mean, that is the real treat of your books, is having these recipes right there at the fingertips. Once you finish a book, because you so want to taste the foods, that to have them right there at the back of the book is just perfect.
Well, it was fun to do the testing on this. And therefore, you know, during this COVID time, pandemic time, I had not one but two books that came out during the pandemic. And both the French and the Italian recipes needed to be tested during a time when we're shut down. So I had enlisted people all across the United States and that are linked into my newsletter if they wanted to help me come into my virtual kitchen and test a certain recipe, then I would sure appreciate it. And I'm telling you, it was joyful. You talk about joyful. I think I had 85 people that signed up for, you know, they were going to do this and that, and they did. They did, and it really made a difference because when you, I had no idea what I was doing when I first decided I wanted to add recipes, because not only do they have to be translated, they have to be transcribed, and how you move from metric to the standard heat and measurement, you know, that is typical for the U.S., and some of the ingredients are not as available. So what do you do? What substitutions? And so that was what we learned. And in testing these out, it was just a lot of fun. And we learned, in fact, my husband and I, oh, I hate to confess this, but we did start doing some videos of cooking, of demonstrating making fresh pasta, and also we did salt and boca, and this is for a private club that wanted to have us do this. And now I've got several bookstores that are wanting us to do this little performance art, and this was not anything that I thought we would be doing, and Lord knows we will not share the outtakes on some of those videos.
Well, I think...
It's not as easy as it looks.
Well, whether you're making gnocchi or salt and buco or whatever, just to be able to cook and share food with people, well, I hope we will start being able to have parties again. I've really missed that. Actually, it's funny. I had planned 2020 was going to be a year of giving parties, and it didn't turn out that way. So
yes.
So I hope that soon that we will be able to get back into, you know, socializing more. And your book, meanwhile, people can take your book and read your book. It's called September to Remember, Searching for Culinary Pleasures at the Italian Table. It's a wonderful book. It is. It's filled with history. It's filled with funny stories. You do get sometimes you do get yourself in little messes, Carol.
I do.
Yeah.
That's called traveling.
That's it. That's called traveling. And you have a lot of fun with it. And so it's just wonderful. And your website is?
CarolBumpus.com.
That's easy to remember. Carol Bumpus,
right.
Carol with an E. And people can go there. They can see more photos. This, as I said, is the third book in the series. And the first two books will take you to France. And this book will take you right through Italy and just having a heck of a time with Carol and all the stories and the wonderful people that you meet along the way and the stories that you have brought, you know, bring them to life and keep this is a wonderful thing to be able to save these stories for posterity. You know, 100 years from now, people will read these stories and be able to understand Italians a little bit better from that period. So it's just wonderful.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Well, you've done a great job, and I want to thank you again. Carol Bumpus, the book is available wherever books are sold, if bookstores are open again, I hope, and it's called September to Remember. That's a real easy name to remember, September to Remember. And when you read this book, it'll be a delight for the entire summer, and you'll imagine yourself on a trip to Italy.
Thank you so much, Patsy.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you for having me. This is my actual pub day. So this is the day.
Oh, a very, very precious, very special day. Thank you. Carol Bumpus, you are wonderful.
Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye. Wow. Okay, I'm just going to check with Big Ed in the control room. Do I have my next? No, she's not here. So, okay, let's go ahead. Let's do the commercials quickly, and then we'll save the book buzz until later, okay?
This is the Tantalk Radio Network. Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more rewarding careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Have you ever faced disaster? The Red Cross is always there for you. The Red Cross responds to a call for help every 8 seconds. They have never turned anyone down. Now they need your financial support so that they can be ready to help you when the need arises. Donate online at redcross.org. Thank you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z, and I am back with my next guest, Mary Kay Carson. And this is so exciting for me because I love this series. It's called Outdoor School, and it is like this series was written for me. Hi, Mary Kay.
Hi, Patsy. How are you?
Okay. Well, you know, it was written for me a little late because I was a homeschool mom for 20 years, and I needed this 20 years ago. 20 years ago. But I don't care. I will still read it and I will promote it so much because I believe in this whole concept of outdoor schools. My childhood was an outdoor school, and for my boys, most of our lessons, actually, because we live in Florida, we could spend most of our day outside. And so we are experts on outdoor schools.
That's awesome.
So tell us about this series and what you are hoping to promote with this.
Sure. Outdoor School is it's a series of books that encourages kids to get outside and explore the natural world, no matter if they live, you know, in the country or in Florida or in the city, in California or in the suburbs in Ohio. It doesn't matter where you live. Everyone has some outdoor to explore. And the idea behind the book is that, one, kids actually learn better outdoors. There are all kinds of studies about how stimulating the outdoor environment is, because it's not just a screen right in front of you. It's actually 360 degrees, right? It's multisensory. You're smelling, hearing, seeing. It's always changing, so you watch the clouds, and then a bird flies by, and then you follow the bird to a tree, and you just sort of, you know, go from there. And so it's both promoting kids getting the sensory and learning experiences of the outdoors, which is just a giant natural laboratory for observing and experimenting, and also to build an appreciation of the natural world, so our next generation takes care of it, maybe even better than we do.
Well, I agree, because, as I said, when I was a kid, first of all, I spent most of my time looking out the window when I was in the classroom. I wanted to get out there because I was raised in northern Michigan. So most of my life was spent running around in the woods up there, or running along the shore of Lake Superior. And so when I started homeschooling, I had no basic idea what I was doing, but I just started wherever I was. And because we lived on the beach, we could be outside. And also, I spent a lot of time at the you know, just the parks with the kids. And I discovered a method of teaching them actually using maps. I would make maps of things and hide clues and stuff like that, so they'd be running around like crazy. And for kids nowadays, it's so important that they do get out. And of course, now we realize that you know, fresh air is good. Fresh air is good for them. Tell us, like, for example, the animal watching. What are some of the things that you have in this book that kids will find particularly intriguing?
Sure. The animal watching book, which is actually the one that I wrote, is broken up into sections of different kinds of animals, and the skills are sort of cumulative. So, for example, in the bird section, which birds are sort of the gateway animal for kids to watch, right, because they're out in the daytime and colorful and you can see them pretty easy. It just starts really simple where, you know, we talk about some birds fly together and some birds soar by themselves. Some birds spend time cleaning and other birds spend time on the ground. And then they go outside and they look for different birds and what they're doing, note them down actually in the pages of the book. And then now that they're interested, they can come back and read a little bit more about bird shapes. And then they go outside and note down and check off where they see bird shapes. So bird shapes like owls or bird shapes like ducks or bird shapes like sparrows. And then they can come back and learn more about identifying birds by color or the stripes on their faces or wings. So it's like a skill building thing that kids can start from knowing nothing. Or, you know, if they already know some things, then they can build on those skills as well. And then at the end, you have a kind of like your own nature journal full of dates and observations, and you can refer to it later. And so it's kind of a keepsake even.
Exactly. You know, for my boys, because they were also scouts, we sort of combined our homeschooling with their badges. So they'd have to earn badges, you know, for different knowledge of things. And one of them, of course, we had outdoor activities. And they spent a lot of time observing birds or observing. We, of course, have sea turtles here. So they got familiar with how sea turtles had to be protected. So there's so many things that when you encourage children to take part in nature that they can get really excited about. One of the things I know one of my sons did, he took photos of birds of all the, like, everyone he could get for over like 6 month period, and then he put together a entire little presentation, you know, in PowerPoint for his troop, which was really a beautiful thing to do.
And did those boys end up being men that like nature still?
Yes. And well, as a matter of fact, he so likes nature. Last weekend, he's now in the middle of Texas. He's just got, you know, he's doing his doctorate, and he went camping because he loves to be out there in nature. And so he went out in the middle of hill country last weekend because he really appreciates spending time looking at animals and looking, you know, recognizing footprints. So of course he doesn't want to meet any snakes there, but other than that, he had a great time. So for you, how did you get involved in this outdoor business? Did you enjoy camping when you were a kid?
You know, we camped some when I was a kid, but we lived in the country, and you know, it was a time when there wasn't really anything else to do, especially in the summertime. And so, you know, you just took the dogs and spent the day at the creek and you know, didn't know that other people didn't grow up that way. But, you know, I ended up loving nature and animals and studying biology. So absolutely. It makes a big difference.
Oh, it does. Well, I love when you said spend the day by the creek. That's what we did. My mother never saw us during the summer. She'd make the peanut butter and jelly sandwiches in the morning. We take that and our Kool-Aid and disappear for the entire day, most of the time down by the creek.
Yeah, that's the way my mother liked it.
Oh, yeah. My mother loved it. She read, when she wasn't working, she'd just read Perry Mason books, and she had a good old time, and we were having fun just out there. And of course, in northern Michigan, we have, you know, some interesting animals too. A lot of deer. We have a lot of skunks. We had to be careful of that. So it was just a wonderful, wonderful childhood.
Well, it's been really nice visiting with you, and I'm glad that you were able to outdoor educate your own kids.
And I will help promote all summer long. I will promote this series because that's one of the things I do. I like to help parents find books that they can share with their children and share ideas. And I want kids to get out there and have fun like I had when I was a kid.
Well, thank you, Patsy.
Okay, well, it's really, and all your books, I must say, I should have you back because you have some other great books that I would love to talk about with you, okay? So Mary Kay Carson, I think you're terrific. You also have a website that people can go to, and I'll have you back perhaps to talk, you know, definitely to talk about some of your other books, okay? And I'd like to hear Inside the Biosphere, okay?
Yes.
All right. Mary Kay Carson. Nice talking to you. Okay. Bye-bye now. Okay. She has this entire series, the different authors have written bit different books, and of course hers is this animal watching one. And while, you know, my brother lives in northern Michigan, he still lives there, and he had snow the other day. Now, any other normal human being would not want snow on April 22nd, but my brother, my baby brother, who I tease so much when I think back on it, he was so happy. He like called me up. Oh, we have snow! We have snow! I said, what are you talking about? It is April 22nd. You don't want snow. He wants snow. Actually, he came down about a month and a half ago, he came down here. He drove all the way down from northern Michigan, came down to Florida. He was here for like 6 days, and he said, it's so hot, I can't stand it. And it was like 79 degrees. Anyway, so he turned around and he went back up north, and then now he's happy with the snow. But he can sit, he sits on his back porch and he watches all the animals that he has around there, particularly deer. And during the winter, he has his baskets of apples that he saves, and he feeds the deer. And they come right up to the porch, and it's fantastic. Of course, his wife didn't like one day when she went out there, and she took a little walk and turned around the corner of the porch, and she looks up, and she's facing a bear, a big one. And the bear looks at her, and she looks at the bear. And she said she doesn't know which one of them were more frightened and shocked. But she took off in one direction. The bear took off in the other direction. So she was very happy about that. But that's what happens when you live in northern Michigan. You do get to spend a lot of time animal watching. And we used to watch bear. We would go out of our way to watch bear because in those days when I was a kid, they had a dump. I don't know. They don't have dumps anymore. But in those days, people used to bring stuff to a dump where they'd burn it. Not very ecologically correct, but in those days they did. And the bears used to come out. So we'd go in our cars. We'd drive. You know, this was a big treat. What the heck? We didn't have anything else up there. Exciting. And so we'd drive in our cars and we'd look at the bear. Oh, well, you know, this is a funny thing. Life is funny. One of the things that I really, when I think about it, and I was reading this, you know, this series, at this entire sort of outdoor series, there are so many things, and we are so lucky for any of us who did you know, have a childhood where we were outdoors and we got to be out there. Recently, I think about a year and a half ago, I was really surprised. I had been, you know, I drive to the studio from my home, and I drive along this beautiful Bellevue Biltmore drive where there used to be a big hotel, and it's a wonderful golf course. And I was driving that route every day for the many years here as I was coming up to the studio, these giant, big houses. And I never saw any kids outside. I never saw any kids in all those years. And then one day I saw actually three children outside in front of their house. And I was very surprised. And they looked very nice. And they were well-dressed children. And it only occurred to me after I drove past them that they didn't look American. So I think they were foreigners, because American kids don't didn't come outside. But I have noticed in my neighborhood that there are people now, I mean, there are families and there are children actually outside. I saw somebody playing with a Frisbee the other day in their yard. They have a giant yard. You know, there's two kids and they're actually playing with a Frisbee. I was pleasantly surprised to see that they were outside and that they were getting fresh air, because the air is particularly wonderful right now. This right now, the weather here in Florida is so perfect. It's just not too hot, not too cold, and it's just that wonderful breeze. It makes you wonder where would anybody want to live other than this place, because it is so beautiful. So I just hope that you will get this series for the kids, because I love it. I want to tell you all, if you are going to do something for children, the thing that you really need to do is give them books. Children need books. The more they read, the more they explore the world, the better, because they have to get away from some of this, all of this, actually, this electronic stuff. It doesn't help them. I really think that you don't learn as well simply by looking at television or videos or anything else. You only really, it goes into your brain if you see the words on paper and you read them. And so that's why I'm just going to spend the whole summer encouraging all of you to give a book to a kid. Just you can just order them online. It's so easy, and send it to a kid you know in your own, you know, family, in your own network, or just send it to one of the children's hospitals where the kids will really appreciate a gift from you. Now, we're going to do a book buzz, a very special book buzz for a very special person. And because she's going to be a guest here, she's got a new series coming out, and you hear me talking about her practically at the end of every program, because, again, you know, I've been watching, all of us have been watching television, and it's just driving me crazy, the lack of material, the sameness of the material. And that's why when I come across a series or come across a book that I would think would make a great program on television, I want to do more to help authors reach out. And it's so difficult. It's so difficult to get, you know, a movie deal. And the reason, sometimes people say, well, you're always pushing for movie deals for people. Well, I do that because the reason is, if you have one movie deal, for just even for one book, like Barbara Hinsky, you get a movie deal, and then it opens your world up so that people will pay attention to you. And that's essentially what you want when you're an author. You want people to pay attention to you, people to order your books, to build this fan base. And with the author that we're going to do a little book buzz, and you know, Rita Moreau, our one-take Rita, did this one, and this was one that she particularly loved to do. So we're going to play this one for Carol J. Perry, and then I'll come back and I'll talk to you a few minutes about several other things. So let's play the one for Rita Moreau did for Carol J. Perry.
This is Rita Moreau reporting for Joy on Paper with the latest book buzz. See Something, a Witch City Mystery Book 11 by fabulous Kensington author Carol J. Perry. Here's the buzz. Salem's Witch TV program director Lee Barrett is about to discover no good deed goes unpunished. Lee has been promoted from field reporter to program director, keeping track of all the shows and managing the local TV personalities, including a cowboy, a clown, and a performing dog, has her head spinning. Perhaps that's what makes her take pity on the distraught woman she finds sitting alone on a bench on the Salem Common. When she realizes that the poor woman doesn't even know her own name, Lee takes her into the warmth of her home she shares with her Aunt Ibby and their clairvoyant gentleman cat, Orion. Maybe Lee can use her own psychic gifts to divine the woman's identity. Lee's detective beau, Pete Mondello, wants to talk to the Jane Doe. But before he can investigate, he's called to a crime scene. A body has been found washed up in a narrow harbor cove. As harmless as her new house guest seems, Lee can't help but wonder if she may be harboring a killer. An entertaining story that keeps readers guessing until the very twisted and eerie end. Carol J. Perry was born in Salem, Massachusetts on Halloween Eve, and that magical city serves as the backdrop for her Witch City mysteries. See Something, a Witch City Mystery Book 11 by fabulous Kensington author Carol J. Perry. For more of my suggestions on the mysteries you should not miss, go to our webpage, www.radio-joyonpaper.com, and click on Book Buzz. That's radio-joyonpaper. Rita Moreau, buzzing off for now.
Okay. And by the way, Rita Moreau has her own book that just recently came out, and it's called Wheeler Dealer. And it's a really great book, and you should check out her book, too. Now, again, I've been getting emails from everybody and about how to find an agent. And I'm going to have some agents on in the next few months to talk more about what they're looking for. And it's a difficult situation. You know, the agents, literary agents, are really general. You know, they try so hard to find an author, to, you know, help an author. But it's not easy. They get so many queries. But if you're going to query an agent, you have to make sure that you're querying an agent who is actually very active, because those are the ones that are eager to find a new talent. And the best place to do it, the best place to find an agent, is to go to Publishers Weekly. Do not buy. I'm going to tell you, do not buy. Do not waste your money on the ABC type of books with a list of literary agents. They are no good. But if you go to Publishers Weekly, there is a section under the news, and it's called Weekly Deals. So every week they list the major deals that people have gotten. And just this week, and this was very nice, Jennifer Jackson from Donald Moss, I met her one time. She's a great agent, and she's from Donald Moss. And Donald Moss is one of the best agents in the world. He was here on the program, and I got to meet him at BoucherCon. Anyway, they got a wonderful deal for, this is a really exceptional deal, a six-figure deal for Lee Harris. Now, Lee Harris writes a series called Murderbot Diaries. And so she was with one group, but they got her a six-book deal for three more of the Murderbot books and three more other books, whatever she wants to write. And when you get six-figure advances, you can write whatever you feel like people want you to just write and write and write. So that's just one of the exciting things that can happen in the publishing world. And as an author, you should be aware of it. So Publishers Weekly, it's the subscription is very reasonable, and you can read most of it online for free. Check it out. Go to their weekly deals. It gives you an idea of what is going on in the industry and who are the names. And these are things that you should know. If you're going, you have to remember, you have to treat being an author, just like any business, if you're going to be in any business, you have to stay, you know, up on the competition. You have to know all of the market. You have to know everything that's going on around you. You can't just live in your, really, your ivory tower or behind your computer and just hope that it's going to happen for you, because it won't unless you get out there and really are active. So whether you are, if you're lucky enough to find an agent or to find a publisher, and there are publishers where you don't need an agent, but it's, again, something you have to do the research about. If you have a great publisher, somebody like Carol J. Perry has this wonderful publisher, Kensington, and they've been sending me lots of books, and I've been really having lots of fun. Winnie Archer was here the other day with her books, again, for Kensington. One of the wonderful things about Kensington, they design the best covers, really, in the business. They are absolutely fantastic. And it's always a thrill for me to get a Kensington author on the program. And I'm going to have a few more coming up in the next few months. And one of them will be Carol J. Perry. So we can talk about her new series. And this is going to be fun because it's set right here in Florida, and she's having a lot of fun. So with this Haunted Haven series, and we're going to have her here, and she's going to be right here in the studio with me, which is going to be really exciting. Anyway, everybody, you know, again, just thank you again for your letters and everything that you sent me for the 6th anniversary of Joy on Paper. I particularly want to thank Jerome Preisler, who wrote on his Facebook page about me and about Joy on Paper. And Jerome Preisler, of course, is going to also be here in May because he's got a new book coming out. So it's really exciting. I've got a lot of things happening in May. Okay, everybody, remember what I always tell you. One of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear them spoken in an audible book. Or if you're very, very lucky, to hear those magic words, lights, camera, action, and your book will be turned into a major motion picture, a streaming video, or perhaps if you're lucky, a series on the Hallmark Channel. You never know, and you won't know unless you start writing. So start today. Hey, my goddaughter Kanisha out there, you can write, you can keep writing. I know you're having a baby, but you can keep writing. And then say something nice to somebody today. I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room because he's so nice to me and he's saluting me. Woo! I love it. I love getting saluted. And make sure that today you tune back into Tantalk Radio Network and listen to Dawn Reese's Hollywood Connections. She's moved her program to Tuesday afternoons, which is really fantastic. And Dawn Reese is fun. And Hollywood Connections, well, that's what everybody wants to know. How in the world do you get some Hollywood connections? Anyway, everybody, have a great day. Bye-bye now.